So some of this racist talk that's out there is propaganda fueled on both sides. And it suits certain agendas because once you break the race politics agenda, you might lose certain voters. Some people who are maybe white racists will be like, "Nia man, that's actually a smart man. I listen to him." Then you lose votes. On the other side, ANC, EFF, all of a sudden, black people, poor black people in shacks, struggling, who lost people during apartheid, are saying things like, "But that white person is working really hard. I've seen what he's done in our community."
Hello, my name is Donald, and welcome to the number one media company, Worldview. At Worldview, we explore everyone's perspectives on all things that can broaden our worldview. Today, author, investor, public speaker, we have Penuel the Black Pen. He's also a frequent host on the Hustler's Corner, a channel that I definitely recommend to anyone. And Penuel, it seems that you also have two YouTube channels now, the one where you deliver commentary and the other one where you do interviews. I see you've already done an interview with Mr. Lux and the woman, I can't remember her name, the woman from the EFF, the former member of the EFF.
Greetings, Donald, and a greetings to all your viewers as well. I think I'm trying to catch up to you guys and also be somewhat of a voice. That's why I have so many channels currently. So I currently work with a known personality known as DJ Scoop on the Hustler's Corner. There's a segment we call the Virtual Cuckoo. And then just recently, I've set up my own YouTube channel called The Penuel Show for conversations. I've always had one called Penuel the Black Pen, but specifically for conversations and interviews, I've got a new one as well. Kantla Lux, we've had on the Hustler's Corner and on the Penuel Show. Mandy Samashiko, the lady you're speaking about who was with the EFF, I've had her as well. And we've had quite a few other, I guess you'd call political and other type of leaders. So I think we've been very blessed as a platform to have those type of voices on the platform, not just for us to engage them, speak to them, but them for them to also educate a lot of our viewers as well.
But Penuel, where does the term the black pen come from? Is it something obviously that you coined?
And you know, Donald, it's actually quite funny because in the last 3 to 5 years, I've transitioned from, I used to call myself pro-black, you know, black conscious, to being a non-racialist now. You know, I went through a lot of epiphanies of sorts where I just realized a lot of people that have added a lot of value to my life, a lot of people who are very good friends of mine have not been black. And it's almost kind of silly to go around holding on to one race. I understand the history of this country and the sensitivity and the work that needs to be done. But for me personally, to go around saying I'm just going to support black, I think was actually quite ignorant of me at the time. A lot of people, when they hear Penuel the Black Pen, they assume that it's got racial undertones. But to be fully honest, I'm actually a visual artist. I draw in black pen. And at some point, I had a budding rap career. I wanted to be a hip hop artist. And it was basically my rap name at the time as well. So the Black Pen was actually my name as an artist and as a musician. And then I think it's just kind of stuck from there.
Interesting. I'm fascinated with your story. Penuel, I've seen your video that you did on the recent court case, Kill the Boer. And to save myself from summarizing your points, perhaps it's best that you explain your viewpoint on the court recently stating that Kill the Boer can continue the equality court.
Sure. No, thanks a lot, Donald. Sorry. The last thing I needed to add was I also, as you said earlier, I'm an author. I've written 13 books. And when I set up my publishing company, I named it the Black Pen Publishers as well. So it's visual art, it's music, and it's writing. I was quite saddened, but probably not surprised at the judgment that came out from the court case between AfriForum and Julius Malema and Mweisen Ndlozi. A lot of people weren't speaking too much about the Mweisen Ndlozi aspect because they were singing a song called Biza I'm a Fire Brigade, which a lot of people had taken offense to because there'd been farm fires recently. And these were some of the songs that were sung at some of those court cases. That case was thrown out. And then the Julius Malema case with Dubulipunu, because the song itself is Dubulipunu, it's not Kill the Boer. That's actually the translation. Tubulibunu, my understanding is shoot the Boer. And the Boer in the context historically was white people, in particular Afrikaans people. And even more in particular, it was white Afrikaans people that were racist and that were part of the apartheid regime that oppressed the black masses of this country, including coloreds and Indians, of course. 1990 happened, 1994 happened. We saw Nelson Mandela, we saw a democratic South Africa, and almost 28 years or close to 30 years later, here we are still singing songs from the struggle. They bring about nostalgia for a lot of black people. For a lot of black people, they meant to really highlight the fact that some of the things that black people had fought for, they've still not gotten. Things like full land redistribution, a full sharing of the economy, some kind of skills sharing, and just ensuring that black people by and large have dignified lives and a full access to equal opportunities. So that's what these songs represent to a lot of people. Sneakily, of course, you'll always find a lot of people that are racist. And I'm one of the black people that believe that black people can be racist. There are black people that say black person can never be racist because we do not control the economy, et cetera. I think that's nonsense. According to definition, if you are prejudicial against someone on the basis of race, that makes you racist. That means if I'm hiring people in my company, if I'm looking for business partners, et cetera, if I look at a person and I say, ah, he's not black, therefore I won't hire him, that makes you a racist. So some people are sneaky and they use these songs obviously to incite racial tension, some type of violence. What we saw with the looting as well, there were a lot of poor people that were looting groceries. But of course, because there was chaos and mayhem, a lot of criminals came in, burning stuff, destroying buildings, destroying other infrastructure as well. I do not believe in my heart that the EFF in defending the song was defending freedom of expression. I do not believe they were defending the right to sing songs that represented something noble back in the day. Understanding that the Tubulibunu mantra more specifically comes from the struggle, the armed struggle. Quanto sees where APLA soldiers, that's where Tubulibunu came from, because there'd been negotiations, they'd been marching. And at that point, all the struggle movements, not just the ANC, the PAC, the IFP and others, they felt, since no one is listening to us, since this marching is not working, and even after June 76, where kids had been killed, they felt it's now time to take up arms and start fighting back and shooting, Tubulibunu, so to speak. I do not believe the EFF is singing these songs with nostalgia. I think they know exactly what they're doing. I think they know that these songs upset a lot of people, especially white people who are trying to progress in this country, hold hands with other races and say, let's move on. It's like, no, we're not going to let you guys move on. We want to remind you of where we come from, and we want to remind you that you're white. You guys have white privilege. You guys own the means of production and all these slogans and things that they always use to gain political favor from certain demographics in this country. So I was very disappointed. The judge did highlight that in another setting, perhaps it would have been seen as hate speech, but he feels that the case was not as strong as it should have been from AfriForum. And maybe that's something for AfriForum to go back and think about, this concept of, did we put together a strong enough case, or were we potentially maybe a bit emotional in putting the case together? And maybe were we naive? Maybe we thought the words themselves would just carry weight. But for those that understand the legal process and processes in this country, sometimes what is just, sometimes what is right, sometimes what is common sense is not upheld in the courts. And sometimes it's literally how well can you present, how well can you pitch, which is kind of sad. I do believe the term is hate speech. I do believe it needs to be removed. The other thing is I'm hoping that AfriForum will learn and see that a lot of South Africans are still very angry and are still hurt. And I'm hoping that they will also see that they need to maybe reconsider their fight for the apartheid flag, because they've said they want to fight for the apartheid flag as freedom of expression. And the same way that they've kind of defended it sounds like the same way that the EFF has defended it. And I think I'll stop there for now.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very interesting point. And I also, because I watched your video, obviously, you also raised that point in the video where you see it is hypocritical that AfriForum is defending at the same time the apartheid flag, but also trying to end Kill the Boer. So They're sort of playing the sides. But why do you think that is the case? Because you've interviewed Aaron Schroots, and I've also interviewed Aaron Schroots. And I mean, he's not a... I'm wondering, what is his motive there? Why would he do something like that? Clearly being on all intents on the objective facts, being hypocritical.
Yeah. So Aaron Schroots, one of the leaders of AfriForum, along with guys like Khalid Priel, have said in the past that they don't support the brandishing of the flag, of the old apartheid flag. They don't support it, and they tell their members to not put this flag up because it upsets a lot of people. They are relatively intelligent guys, you know, having met with Aaron in particular and having looked at some of the work that AfriForum does. And I think they understand the nuances of certain matters. They understand the danger of cancel culture. They understand the danger of blindly just suppressing certain symbols and thoughts and ideas. The problem, unfortunately, is that we live in a country that is not highly literate, highly understanding of nuances, and that is still held by its racial past. So myself and Aris might understand why a flag may not be a big deal. Myself and maybe another enlightened progressive Black person might understand why Dubili Boom was not saying let's kill anyone. It's just a symbolic term from back in the day. But for some people that don't enjoy those privileges of understanding stuff like that, it's very triggering. You know, Aaron's has tried to explain what they're trying to do and where they stand for. But like I said, I really hope with what's happened, he'll realize that, you know, maybe it's not as they thought it would be. And some people actually, when they see the flag, they remember some of their family members that were killed. They remember maybe if they spent time in jail, if maybe they were tortured, they wake up every day in a shack with no jobs, etc. And obviously they don't blame maybe the ANC, they still blame apartheid South Africa. So when you see a flag like that, it's almost like someone rubbing it in your face saying, ah, remember we killed your family members and you're poor because of us. In the same way that a lot of white people, progressive white people, progressive Afrikaners are saying, look, I'm a good person. I understand the history of this country. I want us to move on and I want us to work together. But now if you're going to come and say Dubuli Boon and say, kill the Boer, shoot the Boer is fine. And I'm creating jobs for a lot of Black people. I've got Black business partners. My kids study at school with Black kids. Maybe some of my children are even dating Black people. It's kind of demeaning to me to hear you say that. But that means that person needs to think there are people who to them that song is like, but I'm still poor. So please understand. From a human rights perspective and just from a language perspective, the song is wrong. Because if you just change the words from Dubuli Boon to Dubuli Muntomnyama, which means shoot a Black person, Dubuli Ndiya, Dubuli Khalad as an example, that is fundamentally hate speech, slam dunk, you know. I really hope the appeals will win, not so much to fully remove the song and say the song must never be sung again, and if you sing the song, you'll be put in jail, but more importantly for an education. This country is lacking in education of the masses. Having a sensitivity training understanding of what certain words mean. Black people in this country still call Indian people amakula, coolies. They don't know that that's a derogatory term. When I speak to Black people, I'm like, but that's derogatory. And they're like, no, but it's amakula. What do you mean? And I'm like, you know, there might be some white people who also think kafir or kafir is like, but that's a kafir. What do you mean? Because they probably don't understand the deep aspect of where the name comes from and what it fundamentally means and how it affects people today. So I was saddened. I know the EFF is excited. The other thing that I really hope AfriForum takes from this, because I was quite surprised that they were shocked that they were losing the case. It tells me that I think they expect to win maybe all or most of their cases. And I'm hoping that they can see that our legal system is not as just as they thought maybe it was. And this is AfriForum with millions of rands that come in every month. Now imagine the average Black, white, colored Indian person who doesn't have money, who goes up against maybe an AfriForum, maybe an EFF, maybe an ANC, or some other big company. Imagine how much injustice they get. They don't have an army of lawyers. They haven't studied the Constitution. They don't know legal processes. So I'm hoping part of what they will learn along with their followers is to see that, you know, a lot of people are actually suffering because this legal process we have in South Africa is not fair. And at any given time, it might favor someone incorrectly so.
What do you see as the solution? Because in your video, you say that, and like you just said, that it's skewed against in favor of rich people, the legal system. So how do we change it to favor the average person on the street? How does he get the legal representation he deserves?
South Africa's had a lot of sit downs from a leadership perspective, whether it was ending or moving from a union to a republic back in the day, after the Anglo-Boer War, called the South African War now, when the British and the Afrikaners sat together and tried to see a way forward at the exclusion of Blacks, colors, and Indians. Later on, of course, we had CODESA. And even in CODESA, we didn't necessarily get minutes of how this country was going to be run moving forward. What we got instead was a constitution. What we got instead was the Black Economic Empowerment Act. A little bit of land redistribution. Here and there, some BEE shares that favored some politically connected people. South Africa needs to have robust conversations, and not just at a leadership level. And in the past, where the leaders made the decisions, I think it's about time we start speaking to the people at ground level. We need to speak to white English people, white Afrikaners, and ask them, what do you want? Do you want apartheid back? So that we actually have an understanding and say, you know, there's a percentage of white people that say, we want apartheid back, so now we know. We want to hear from some Black people. Do you think white people should be chased back to Europe? Do you think they should be killed? Do you think we should nationalize, and why? And after gathering that data, get intelligent, progressive people to sit and be like, now that we know what people want, let us now go and educate them on why what they want is destructive. Why, if we just blindly give you land without the training of how to work the land for property development, for agriculture, you will go hungry? Why, for example, if we get apartheid back, why it will disadvantage even white people? Because you've got Black people that are being oppressed, as an example. So we're not having that education, and then we need to filter it into the schools. And along with filtering it in, we need exchange programs. There are white people in this country that haven't spent any time in townships. They hear the story, they see a few pictures, but they don't really know what that means. They don't know what it feels like to wake up in a squatter camp with no electricity, sewage running there, and just to get the psychology of the people living there. You know, so there's a detachment. I see it even today with privileged Black people in places like Johannesburg and Durban and Cape Town. The same way a lot of Black people thought white people were ignorant, you hear now educated, well-off Black people, why are they looting? Oh, I don't want to pay tax for this rubbish. And I'm like, you guys have become detached from the people on the ground because their psychology is just different. So we need to have those conversations and those engagements. And part of the outcomes, I hope, is either a dismantling or a re-engineering of our legal system, where it is not just top down, but it's also from bottom up. What do the people need, and what do we understand to mean? What do we understand justice to mean? Does it mean locking someone in a cage? Or does it mean getting that person to actually pay back to the family that they took from? You know, should we be punishing or really rehabilitating, as an example? Our legal documents, why are they still in Latin?
Yeah.
Why are they in complicated language, as an example? Why can the average South African not walk into a courtroom and be able to just state their case and say that, why must affidavits have an exact date and time, knowing full well that no one, when a crime is happening, is looking at the time and saying, oh, at 12 minutes past 11, that's when the guy came in and was wearing a red t-shirt with this brand. No one does that realistically. But as soon as you say, well, it wasn't red, it was blue. It wasn't 11:15, it was 2:00 in the afternoon. Oh, that means you're lying, you're not a credible witness, we're throwing this case out. That is absolutely retarded.
That's essentially what they did to Fakey on the Zondo Commission, where they tried to tear her apart because of these minute details, and then they discredit her. But obviously, she didn't make that entire story up.
Yes, you're very right. It's small technicalities. I mean, small things like, did you file the summons within 14 days before the court date? It's ridiculous, it's retarded, and it doesn't hit to the heart of what we're trying to do, which is we're trying to make a better society with better behaving citizens that care for each other, that treat each other with respect and tolerance. And where there's some mistake that's wrong, we need to find out, was the person aware of that mistake? So maybe it was just an ignorance thing, no, you can't do that. You can't call a person that. You can't take what's not yours. This is an education thing. Or was it malice? If it's malice, that means we need to both punish and then teach on why what you did was wrong. And then from there, build a better society. But that's currently not where we are. And there's a lot of people that make a lot of money. Obviously, you've got guys like Advocate Dalim Ofu, Kharinal Beriru, and the guys at the top that are making millions off these cases, especially when they get kicked on, they get rolled forward, and. Our politicians, some of the big business people, because they understand how rotten our legal system is, they obviously just pump lots of money and they never really get to be in court, and we never really see justice being upheld.
Absolutely, absolutely. Penny, well, you've mentioned that there are black people that believe white people should go back to Europe, or they should go back to Europe. Do you think that's represented in the 10% of support that the EFF has? Do you think those 10% of people believe that white people should go back to Europe? Or do you think they just don't know all the facts?
I think Frantz Fanon came up, it might be him, or he's credited with cognitive dissonance when you hold two conflicting ideologies. Very blatant hypocrisy. I've said this to Black Africans before, that if you claim to hate colonization, colonialists, and the colonial way of living, we live in a relatively free South Africa. At any given time, you can go back and live like our ancestors. Move to the villages, fetch water from the rivers, build a mud hut, not have electricity, make fires, etc., etc., and live an agrarian life where you're just a farmer, subsistence farmer, you're manufacturing basic things. Nothing is stopping you from doing that. You can wear traditional wear, skin, animal skin, hides, etc. The reality is that Black people, by and large, in this country, actually don't mind Westernization. We love electricity. We love cars. We love Western clothing. We love the ability to press a few buttons and things get solved, the ability to speak to some of our relatives via video, etc. But what we're not discussing, which is what I'm saying in the conversations, is clearly there are certain pain points that have not been resolved. And then politicians, maliciously so, then take that and then copy and paste it to all other issues. So Julius Malema, Floyd Shibambo, and Wesini Ndlozi might say, go back to Europe where you come from. You know, this is not your country. Africa is for Africans. Understanding and seeing that Africans actually don't mind working with white people, buying from white businesses, sending their kids to schools with white teachers. Some of the issues is just equal access to opportunities. Some of the issues is just that there's some rich people who never really shared the wealth. And where they did share, they didn't share with the majority of Black people. They shared with a handful of Black people that have become elites today and who are working as a buffer between the rich whites before and the poor Blacks today. You know, so the EFF, as an example, uses all of that and the understanding that people are just undereducated, miseducated, don't understand how things really work. They use that to then run this propaganda machine, which is very false. So I do not believe that the 10% that votes for the EFF wants white people to leave. What I think they want, which sadly, the majority of white people have never done, they would like white people, white leaders in the church, in business, in politics, on a regular basis, because human beings are finicky like that. On a regular basis, guys, we're really sorry about what happened during apartheid. We're really sorry about colonization. We believe our forefathers, we weren't there, were doing what they thought was best, but they ended up harming you and your forefathers. We are willing to, where we can, work together. We are willing to, where we can, to share skills, knowledge. And where possible, we're hoping that you guys can help us as well. But what a lot of Black people feel on a daily basis in the streets is just white people that refuse to acknowledge the past, refuse to acknowledge the injustices of the past, and refuse to extend a hand to work together. Because some of these white people are like, maybe if we let these Black people in, we might lose our privileges. Look at employment equity, look at affirmative action. Look at what happens when you let Black kids inside a school, the school deteriorates. Look at what happens when Blacks come into a neighborhood, all of a sudden the neighborhood is gone to the dogs. So a lot of Black people just like that. And I think if there was a genuine feel from white people and white leaders in particular that, guys, we are deeply sorry, we made a mistake, we're looking to work together, it's going to be difficult, not everyone will benefit, But if you're willing to work hard, if you're willing to educate yourself, if you're willing to just, you know, understand the past as well and let bygones be bygones as far as possible, we can build a better future. It's easier for us that go to Model C private schools to speak like this because we had white friends, we played rugby, we dated white girls. But for the average Black person in this country, they'll never feel that. And all they ever see is white people in restaurants, on planes, living the good life and just whining about crime and, oh, but the ANC is corrupt. And it's like, but it's because of you guys. You've never said sorry and you've never extended a hand so that we can maybe help you get rid of corrupt ANC, EFF politicians and be able to vote for the type of people that are willing to work to make a better country.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of sympathy with that point. And through Worldview, we've realized that is the problem. And we're trying to convince people like Peter Groenewald that these small concessions, even if you consider it a concession, can make a massive difference. And I've told him that just to say sorry for, but what he says, his rebuttal to that is, I never voted for the National Party. It's not my responsibility. That's what he says. What would be your response to that?
It's simply not good enough, unfortunately. And he knows it. He's a highly intelligent man. He knows that they understand. I have a sensitivity to the Afrikaner story in particular. Understanding where Afrikaans people came from historically, when they came to South Africa trying to build their own little stake in this country, getting treated as second-class citizens by the British, being seen just as these farmers, and then coming together, collaborating, putting funds together, the Reddingstad Bond, the Broederbond as an example, building infrastructure, taking over government and building institutions that to this day are still standing. And then after that, you get Black people who overnight are going to inherit these institutions and this infrastructure coming to tell them, say sorry, what you guys did were wrong. It's like, yeah, fuck. We fought for this country. In the Anglo-Boer War, we also lost people. We had to pull ourselves up from the bootstraps, you know? So if you want us to take you seriously, go and build, for example, a Black Springbok team. Go and build great schools like Paul Roos Gymnasium. Go and build universities, build roads, build an ESCOM. Show us that you're worthy. But once you have an understanding, I'll speak as a parent, once you have an understanding of children and children's feelings and psychologies, you know how powerful words are. You know, we've seen it with Hansie Cronje, who said the devil made him do it. You know, we've seen it with certain other people who will say, you know, I was in a dark place, I was wrong. Human beings are actually forgiving. Black people in this country are Christian. They understand the story of forgiveness. So, this is going to be wrong for me to say this. Even if it is not fully genuine, just saying, I will humble myself to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I am part of a race. I was not there. My forefathers may not have been involved. We were maybe anti-apartheid activists, but I would like to, as a white person, to apologize.
You have nothing to lose.
You've got nothing to lose and so much to gain. So much to gain. Some of us now are in an era of a highly corrupt ANC. And in future, if the ANC is called to account, it will be silly to be like, oh, I didn't vote ANC. No, I only voted for Mandela. No. Just to be like, you know what? I was there at the time. I maybe should have said more. I maybe should have done more. I'm sorry for what happened. And I'm sorry that people that share my race did those horrendous things. I'm sorry. After saying you're sorry, what do you think should happen? And then is there a way for us to make it a reality or for me to be like, look, you can't have that, unfortunately, but maybe I can help with in some way. There are a lot of white people in this country, various celebrities, various sports stars that the Black masses absolutely love. So some of this racist talk that's out there is propaganda fueled on both sides. And it suits certain agendas because once you break the race politics agenda, you might lose certain voters. Some people who are maybe white racists will be like, yeah, man, that's actually a smart man. I listen to him. Then you lose votes. On the other side, ANC, EFF, all of a sudden, Black people poor black people in shacks struggling, who lost people during apartheid, are saying things like, but that white person is working really hard. I've seen what he's done in our community. He's apologized to us. I mean, you look at, I think it's Chris Papa in KwaZulu, who speaks fluent Zulu. Already for Zulu people, they love him just for the fact that he made an effort to learn their language. Something like that. I mean, if I meet an Afrikaans person, I'm like, goeiemôre meneer, my name is Pete. Well, jy praat so goed Afrikaans. Already I'm winning his heart. Just that little effort, I think would go a long way into what you're saying. You don't lose anything and you've got so much to gain. If we are genuine about building a united South Africa that is progressive and that, like the Springboks, can start taking on the global world powers and start winning.
Absolutely. And I think it's important because I think once again, Pieter Groeneveld likes to fall back on this. We're not talking about reconciling with the ANC. We're all against the ANC. We're just talking about reconciling with each other. We have to differentiate between the ANC and South Africans. And the ANC might like to pivot to this and keep saying, oh, it's because of apartheid that we can't do what we're currently doing. But there's a difference between the ANC and the average South African, the average black South African. And perhaps they have a point. They're wrongly using that point. But they still have a point in terms of there is some emotional trouble still with people to this day that you have to account for.
That is absolutely correct. And for a long time, the ANC believed or made it seem like they had a monopoly on the black voice and they had a monopoly on the black psychological standpoint. The IFP kind of slipped at some points. The PAC has dropped the ball. COPE was just angry. Better guys that wanted their own power and their own voices, and I'm really hoping we're going to see a rise of alternative, powerful black voices that can speak to different sides, that can speak to the poor black struggle, that can speak to the Model C middle class black child, that can speak to the rich private school black child, and that can also reach the poor white person, the middle-class white person who's a nurse or a police officer or a school teacher, and the rich white person who's a billionaire who comes from privilege, and be able to speak to all of them and make them all understand that, guys, everyone is struggling. Everyone has problems. Yes, you might have more money than the next guy. You might be poorer than the next guy, but at some point we need to find each other. If we claim that, I mean, I use the Springboks now as an example. If we claim we're trying to build an amazing Springbok team that can win a World Cup, we need to get a Mapimpi from like a more impoverished background. We need to get a Siya Kolisi who comes from a poor background, but then got the chance and the opportunity to go to a better school, like a Grey High School in Port Elizabeth, eKrabega. We need to, as time goes on, see some of the well-off black kids coming to the Springboks. Same with Afrikaans people. Everyone assumes all the Afrikaans kids that end up becoming Springboks come from these huge farms and their families are rich. Some are kids who's like, I stand to be corrected, but I think Dwayne Vermeulen was raised by a single mom, you know, who was at a lot of his games. You know, some of these guys didn't go to big rugby schools. They literally every day, you don't become a Springbok just because your dad was a Springbok. You have to go to practice. You have to go to gym. You have to eat well. You have to play on the field. You have to bleed. You have to tackle. But Mapimpi also has to bleed. He also has to tackle. So if we can find a way to get people to understand that all of us need to come together, poor, rich, black, white, Indian, colored, and all of us have a position to play. And if you are talented as a black person, you can't just be a wing. You know, maybe you should be the decision maker, be the fly half, be the scrum half, be the captain like Kolisi, be the coach, be the strategist. It can't just be just because you're a big Afrikaner, you need to be a flank or you need to be a prop. Maybe you should be a wing because you're super fast, because you're good at scoring tries. Like, there's so much psychological work we still need to do as a people. And it takes some of us who are more sensitive to try and bring some of these people together, you know, and to get them to understand that, guys, until we sort out this country of ours, we'll never be able to compete with the world. And the world will continue dominating us. And they'll continue. And the political leaders, unfortunately, will keep saying, oh, Mapimpi, don't play for these guys. They're white racists. So Mapimpi says, I don't want to play today, coach. Or you tell Peter Steph Dutoy, ah, are you going to play with black people? You know, these people are looting. It's stupid. And we'll never get anywhere as a nation one, as long as we have that mindset politically, economically, and also from a legal standpoint.
Do you think the person to unite us is Herman Mashaba?
Very tough question. I don't know if Herman Mashaba can fully connect with the poor black masses. So I was with Gaten McKenzie a few weeks ago, and one of the things he was explaining at the table we were at with the majority of white people, well-off white people, was for the black masses currently, what they're still looking for is a black person that is a rebel, but with a cause. So for them, they still want someone who has a background of, I grew up poor, I didn't have parents, so I was raised by my grandmother in the village, in the township. I lived a political life, I've been fighting, I'm rebellious. I hate the legal system, I hate the economy, I hate white monopoly capital, we need to get our land, black people need to rise. That's what got black people to love Jacob Zuma, that's what have people loving Julius Malema. A Herman Mashaba is not that. You know, yes, he's got his own story of struggle, but his story is mostly highlighted as a black entrepreneur during apartheid who built Black Like Me. And then from there, I mean, he doesn't support BEENN. From a governance perspective, which the black masses and the poor masses, and arguably the majority of white people as well, the governance conversation is something we're not even speaking about yet. Who is the best person to do the job? Right now, we want 10 black people in the Springboks. We're not speaking about who are the 10 best players to play in the Springboks. Herman Mashaba coming from the DA, now with Action SA, Musi Maimane, who also came from the DA, they were speaking very much about governance. We can do things well, we're better managers. The masses are not there yet, unfortunately, because of the emotional, psychological trauma. They still want to hear, we're going to get the land. We're going to get the, when I grew up in the village with my grandmother, while we were working in the fields, when my mother was again working for a white madam, that's still kind of the emotional story that gets them going. If you're telling them, but I use the Springboks, I'll use retail as an example. If you're telling them, do you want to always shop at a Spaza shopper? Would you like into a Woolworths? Walk into a Woolworths and be able to buy good quality products. The reality is people would like a Woolworths. But if politicians were to infiltrate retail and they tell people, you have to support this Spaza shop, our ancestors, our forefathers fought for this, the Woolworths is the white man's business and it makes the white man rich, black people wouldn't shop at Woolworths. They wouldn't. So that's what happens in politics. And I think once Herman Mashaba, people like Musi Maimane, and some of the other voices that are coming up, once they can find a way to win over the psychology of the black masses, they'll win. And a lot of that, like we were speaking about, just saying sorry, a lot of that has to say, you have to start your story with what the people are used to. Tell the Jesus story. Tell the Moses rescuing the Israelites from the Egyptian story. Speak about yourself, whether it is you personally, whether it's Herman's father, grandmother. Say, my grandmother grew up poor. My father was put in jail. Tell that story, because that's the story that will get you the ears and the heart. And then from there, after that, start saying, with what they did, with what I've done, with where we are, yes, we have a Spaza shop today, thanks to what they did for us. But do we dream of a Woolworths? Do we dream of conquering the world? If we do that, at some point, we have to move away from revolution and struggle and comrade and cadre and chief to say, can we speak management, getting things done? How can we do that? How can we get things done? Your children were studying Bantu education. You got them into a township school. Now you'd like them to get a scholarship into a good school and into top universities and Ivy League, Harvard, Oxford universities. And for that, the mindset has to change. Your child can't be at Harvard, Oxford, constantly fighting for the same struggle because it's changed. But you have to start by winning them where they are now. And of course, if where they are now is a shack where they're getting poor service delivery and. I still think Herman and the guys, where they, if they want to win, they need to go on a campaign, of course, to speak about the work they're doing, but also to highlight to these poor black masses that all your leaders live in those neighborhoods that are not run by them. They live in areas, they send their kids to certain schools where you can't send your kids. They want to speak to you about public healthcare, but they don't use public healthcare. If anything, they have shares in a lot of these companies that they call white monopoly capital. All of them. Their pension funds, some of their best friends, they have shares there, but then they come here and they lie to you. And I'm telling you that I may not have an amazing struggle story like them, but I'm telling you that I'll be open and I'll be honest. I went to a decent school. I studied with white kids. I've got white friends, definitely. But I want you to leave this shack and move into a better house. I want you to get good service delivery. I'm not here to come and tell you about apartheid. We all know apartheid was bad. I'm here to tell you that we need a future. Mapimpi can either stay at home and cry forever. The Springboks are racist. Afrikaners are racist. Or he can travel the world with his talent and his skills and his gift. Make a lot of money. Become a hero, not just in South Africa, but to children around the world. And we're saying for Black South Africans, you deserve better. You deserve to have a Mapimpi moment, a Siya Kolisi moment, where politically, economically, you can shine to the rest of the world. And you will not do that while you're stuck crying in this shack that you're in, because your political leaders who do not live here, who do not know this life anymore, are going to keep telling you to vote for them so they can steal money and carry on living a top life. So I don't know if Herman is the guy yet, but he does speak for a certain demographic that has moved past that apartheid victimhood mentality. Unfortunately, it's still a very, very small group of people.
Interesting. Penuel, you've interviewed on the Asta's Corner, you've interviewed Duduzane Zuma. What is your opinion of him? Because I think you let him a bit off the hook with his argument that he's not corrupt. Well, obviously, every person is innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. But his argument was, no court has ever found me guilty yet, so I'm not corrupt. But I mean, Penuel, in South Africa, you'll take 2 years just to get your court case often in the court. So I think Judge Slope his case is still pending with 10 years. And yeah, but what is your opinion of the guy?
I sat with a new friend of mine, Rob Hersoff, from the Hersoff family and Anglophile. He's got a huge problem with the Zuma family and the Guptas, and he believes, like a lot of other people, that they destroyed our country, they destroyed the economy, 9 wasted years, rampant corruption, etc. Because of that, because he was working directly with the Guptas, Duduzane Zuma is part of the problem. So Rob was upset when I interviewed Duduzane. Understandably so. Rob asked me, Pen, you've had a chat with Duduzane, you've gotten to know him personally a little bit. Is he a good guy? And I said, Rob, to be honest, I don't know Duduzane that well, to be fully honest. That was my first time meeting him. It was a very short conversation. I've watched some of his interviews, etc. But I said, Rob, imagine this. Your father was president of apartheid South Africa. And you did business with certain people that had oppressive business practices, that oppressed Black people, that maybe were corrupt, et cetera, et cetera. But you're like, look, I'm a good person. And it's like, yeah, but your dad was leading apartheid South Africa. Your business partners were committing atrocities. And you're like, but I'm a good person. I'm sorry. I've showed up to every court case, because that's what Duduzane says. Zondo Commission, I showed up. Every time I've been accused, I've showed up. Every time I've been asked questions, I've answered. And because I'm Duduzane Zuma and my father's Jacob Zuma, you best believe everywhere we've been, SARS, banks, compliance, our stuff gets looked at with a microscope. You know, it's not like a normal person where they just stamps, like, ah, it's Duduzane Zuma. There must be some funny. So they've gotten extra scrutinized. And he's saying, I haven't been corrupt. He hasn't necessarily defended the Guptas, but he said, as far as I know, we weren't doing anything corrupt, and. And I'm saying, just from that departure point, maybe you'll start getting an understanding into Duduzane's mindset. What that means is he may be corrupt, he may have worked with corrupt people, but he may not be aware that there was corruption. Or he may have been fully aware, and now he realizes, look, I'm in trouble now, so I need to try and isolate myself from the rot. The bottom line is that Duduzane, unfortunately, according to some people, is born of the wrong dad. He just happens to be Jacob Zuma's son. If it was any other person, he doesn't carry that extra baggage. Number two, he's done business with so many people. He just did a bulk of his business with the Gupta family. So all of a sudden, now he's tainted. We don't know necessarily what he was doing in the business, and we don't even know in the background what dealings he was doing. Think about it. I'm Tutu Zani Zuma, my father's Jacob. As far as I'm concerned, as a young, ambitious chap, when this guy wants to meet someone that my dad knows, sure, why would I not do it? Just because it's my dad? No. You're a business person. My dad knows those people. I'll introduce you. I'm friends with Rassie Erasmus, or Nina Aber now at the Springboks. My dad used to be a Springbok. You'd like to meet them. Why would I say no? No, it's nepotism. Unless you can show me definitively that I did something wrong, or these people maybe paid me for these things, and that's not allowed. I did nothing wrong, and I'm not going to not introduce people just because my dad is. Andile Ramaphosa is not going to not do business with people just because his dad is Cyril Ramaphosa. Of course, it comes with that extra baggage, unfortunately. I do not know if Tutu Zani is corrupt. I do not know potentially how corrupt the Guptas were or were not. What I do know is from what he said, from what he's currently doing now, like a Gayton McKenzie, he's saying Gayton McKenzie committed crimes. He owns it. He spent time in jail. He's reforming. He's paying his debt back to society times 100. Tutu Zani Zuma is saying, I have done nothing wrong. If I've been found wrong, find me guilty. I'll be guilty. I'll serve my time. I haven't been found wrong. So unlike Gayton, I can't say, well, I committed these crimes. But with this bad name I've gotten, I am saying, okay, I've got a bad name. If you want me to show up, I'll show up. But I'm also willing to work. I'm not going to step back and hide and not put my hand up for leadership and not serve just because you don't like my dad. You don't like my business partners. I, like you, want to live in a country that is first world, that has a great economy. I want to be a dollar billionaire like the rest of you guys. And if I have a privileged position with my dad, with the ANC, with business, I am going to do it. And I will connect people. Johann Rupert sat with Given Mkhari and he said, if you can get ambitious young black people in a room, I'll bring some of the old topies, rich white people, and they can work. So Tutu Zani is saying, I'm not going to be ashamed of where I come from. You know, where the wrong has been done, by all means, we'll apologize, we'll be punished. But until that point, I will keep working. I will not hide. So I can respect that from him. My hope is that if we can have another engagement with him, I will then hit on some of the harder questions that need to be asked. Because hopefully by then I will have gained his trust. He will have seen I'm not malicious. I'm not someone who would ambush him. So I'd even warn him up front. I'm going to be asking some of these hard questions. It's going to be hot. It's going to be emotional. So brace yourself, you know, and hope that he can understand that as a gent and be like, by all means, let's hit, especially if the aim is to explain my side of the story and then also to tell people, guys, we need to work. We need to move. Springboks may have been racist in the past. They may have kept black players out in the past. That was the past. We're here now. Springboks are for all South Africans. And if you're willing to play hard, if you're willing to perform on the field, you can become a Springbok. And that's where we are now. So I don't know. I don't know. I think time will tell what will happen with him and the Gupta family as well.
Yeah, no, I have a lot of sympathy with your position. I mean, you just want to convey his worldview to your audience as well. And we've, for example, we've interviewed Carl Niehaus and we got into a lot of trouble for that. But once again, the person remains a human, right? Obviously, like you've just told us, he is a human. It's not his fault that he is his father's son. And he might be corrupt, he might not be corrupt, but his view needs to be shared, obviously. And I mean, he still has a life. I mean, you can't just now say, okay, you can't do anything. You can't run for politics. You can't be a businessman just because of what happened. I mean, you can 100%. Reform. If he's done something wrong, you can reform like Gayton and McKenzie. I just think that argument he made that, oh, I haven't been prosecuted yet, that's in South Africa context. I mean, the legal system is, as you'd say in Afrikaans, in say Muren. So,
yes. You're very right.
But
everyone says that. Everyone says that it's very upsetting for me. What is important for me is for people to tell their story and then let the public decide for themselves. Absolutely. Forum lost the case now with the EFF. But we've heard now both arguments, and now the public gets to decide the court was wrong. So all people like myself want, we want people, even apartheid leaders, I'm hoping to sit at some point with people that were hardcore racists, or maybe are still even racist today, just to hear their mindset and be like, oh, okay, look, if my daughter had been raped, gang raped by a bunch of black guys, if my dad was shot by his black farm workers, who he employed, etc. If everywhere I look, there's ANC corruption, my wife can't get a job because they're looking for a black female, maybe I understand how I could become racist. Maybe I understand. He's wrong to say all black people, of course, but at least now we have an understanding. And the converse for the other side, for white people to understand why a black person might be wanting to kill, let's say a farmer. But this guy gave you a job. But if you looked at how he treated us every day, how he whipped us, how he looked at us as animals, his dog would sit in the front, we would sit in the back. Every day we were, you know, just to understand the psychology of the person you're dealing with. So you're very right. I think our legal system is rubbish. I think it is very convenient for Duduzane Zuma, a Jacob Zuma, an Ace Magashule, Cyril Ramaphosa, an AfriForum, and EFF to be like, well, the court has said, the court has, the EFF themselves, they've proven that they're hypocrites now. This judgment went in their favor. In the past, they've said the courts are, whatever the case may be. So it's convenient and it's wrong. So I fully agree with you. Our system doesn't say murin, you know, and for me, I just want the public to hear the full stories and then decide for themselves, so that even if the courts make a decision, the public can always say, Nelson Mandela was not a terrorist. They were wrong. He was fighting for the liberation of black people. We don't care what the law says.
Benoel, in that interview with Duduzane Zuma, he, and I think you also agreed with him, you made a very interesting point that you think it's time for the young people to take over, that the ANC has been too encapsulated, too ruled by old people. It's time for the younger people like Duduzane Zuma to step up. Do you think South Africa would be a better place if younger people were to fill in their shoes? Because I think then we'll potentially be left to the vices of the EFF. I mean, the EFF is that they're a bunch of young people. So perhaps the old people are not that smart at the moment, but the younger generation might be even worse.
No, you're right. Sorry, before we continue, please can you just alert me when it's 10:25?
It's 10:26.
Okay. No, we can hit for another 4 minutes.
Okay, no problem.
The short answer to your question, short answer, is it's not an age thing. That's the short answer. It is not an age thing. It's not a race thing. It's not a gender thing. The best capable people to run this country should be running this country. But now, I'm so happy I used the Springboks as an analogy. But now you look at the Springboks as a team and you've got old players there, 33, 35. They come with the wisdom and the experience. They've worked under these pressure conditions, etc. The reality is that young people are just fitter. They can run all day. They don't have injuries. Some of them are not holding on to certain ideologies of the past. So maybe an old guy is like, yo, but it's the old blacks. I've played these guys. They're tough. The young guy is like, I don't care. I want to show the world we can beat these guys, because they don't really understand the nuances. What young people bring in politics and in business is they bring energy, which old people don't have. Old people just get tired. It's just a biology thing. You get tired quicker. We bring an energy. We bring a creativity. Once you become older, you start understanding how the world works. Start being like, yeah, but if we pull here, we'll upset there. And you become more diplomatic. Young people can be creative, because they don't have those alliances. For example, if someone says, yeah, but the ANC said in 94, we weren't there in 94. Whatever they agreed with your grandfather, it's not on us. We now, your grandkids, are going to negotiate with your grandkids. Our grandkids and your grandkids are going to negotiate a new thing. That was your thing. This is our thing now. And also because, by and large, the majority of this country and the African continent is young in itself. So understanding the lingo, the slang, understanding what's happening on the ground. Your old grandfather might hate white people, might have an inferiority complex. To you, you're like, but I used to dominate white kids at school. What do you mean? You know, the white girl is like, but I've dated black guys, so I don't understand what you're talking about. So they don't have some of that baggage that some of the older people have. The unfortunate thing is that when you look at the EFF, which I still call the ANC Youth League 2.0, and I know it upsets a lot of EFF members, I don't care. Those guys are a breakaway from the ANC Youth League that was suspended. They still have the same ideology. They're speaking nationalization, and those are Freedom Charter things, which made sense then. And it doesn't sound like they have futuristic thoughts now. You know, they're not speaking digitalization of land usage. How do we use blockchain to capture the thoughts of the youth? You know, it's not a representative, not a representation of young people. That's why some young people like Duduzane Zuma. I mean, I don't even know if his handle of isiZulu as a language is that strong, speaks English most of the time, he's traveled the world. When you look at guys like Vusi Tembewayo as well, who speaks English, he's traveled the world, they're like, this might be fresher. It's not coming with that old baggage. Yes, we need them to understand the past, but they're speaking about the world, globalization, how we compete, as an example. So the short answer is the most capable people must run. And one of the things I've said in particular to black young people is, because you guys refuse to vote for young black people in your branches, at your conferences, because you guys still vote for old people, and because you guys are still being outsmarted by old people, you probably don't deserve to lead. If my grandfather is running the family or the family business, and I'm like, yo, this old man, you know, the family business is collapsing under his leadership, another person would be like, well, prove that you're better than him. And if he won't let you run the business, build a business on the side, EFF. Take on a neighborhood, what Gayton McKenzie is doing in the Central Karoo. Take on a neighborhood and be like, look at what we've done as the EFF. Look at what we've done in this neighborhood. Look at the homes we've built. Look at the roads. We've built something like an Orania. The people are working. The people are fed. Look at the education system here. If you vote for us, this is what you're going to see. And you're like, it doesn't matter how nostalgic you are. You're like, I want to live in a place like that. Instead of telling us just put political rhetoric, show us the work that you're doing. Then you actually deserve to run the family business. But your grandfather's outsmarting you. He's bullying you. He's killing you. And you're complaining in the same way people complain, oh, apartheid, apartheid. You're like, yeah, but the old ANC, old. That means you probably don't deserve to lead. Because if we put you in power, failing to just beat old people and apartheid legacies, then maybe there's a chance the rest of the world is going to dominate you. You know, if Siya Kolisi wants to work his way into a team, if Mapimpi want to work their way into a team with white players, they need to prove it. It's not controversial. I'll use a realistic example now. The Springboks are beginning to start a guy called Joseph Dweba at the hooker position, you know, with Malcolm Marx. Malcolm Marx, when he came in, his throwing wasn't the greatest, you know, and he had to work his way up to be the dominant hooker, times like Bismarck Duplessis and the guys. Joseph Dweba has been given a platform. You know, he's been given a chance, had a few shaky games, and they're like, look, we believe in you. But if he wants to maybe start ahead of Malcolm Marx in important tests, if he wants to stay in the Springbok setup, he needs to prove it. It's not enough that he's black. It's not. He needs to prove that he deserves to be in the team. So for young leaders, Nhlanhla Lux, Duduzane Zuma, people like Gayton McKenzie, people like Herman Mashaba, Musi Maimane, some of the ladies, Nompendulo Mkhatshwa, who led Fees Must Fall. If you look at Lindiwe Mazibuko as an example, show us that you're capable and you're competent. Don't, oh, well, I'm not in government. I don't have a big budget. You have a neighborhood. Gayton McKenzie is using social media and Twitter. Show us in your neighborhood what you've done. You know, we've sorted out the roads here. Our community meets once a month, and you're like, I love this person. This is a leader I can follow. That's what people want to see now. Show us, prove to us that you're the better proposition. And then we will tell the whole world, this is you. Gayton McKenzie, ex-convict, criminal. But people are saying, we're looking at the work Gayton is doing. He's saying stuff, but he's doing even more. That's a guy we can follow. And I'm hoping that more people, especially even in the Patriotic Alliance itself, Gayton can't be the only hero there. What is the Patriotic Alliance doing? The Democratic Alliance, it's not enough to say, oh, the ANC is bad. Show us what you're doing. Yeah, but look at the Western Cape. Show us the townships in the Western Cape. Show us the Cape Flats. That's what we want to see, because that's where the majority of the people are living. It's like the ANC showing us Sandton or Umhlanga. No, that's where rich people live. They use private services. They have private security. Show us the work you're doing in the townships. Win us over with your work. So once young people do that and start supporting each other, it'll be game over. But for now, they haven't earned it, in my opinion. Donald, I just want to say thank you very much for the work that you guys are doing. Thank you for some of the connections that you've linked me to as well. I'm looking forward to meeting you physically soon, and I'm looking forward to us doing more work together. I think the country needs us. And I'm happy that you put your hand up and you're willing to do some of this really, really important, but very hard work. Thank you so much. And I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you, Panil. I know you have a meeting now, and thank you so much for this conversation. This has been absolutely inspirational and fascinating. In conversations, I think in South Africa, we definitely need more. So thank you so much for your time. To our viewers, you enjoyed this conversation, like this video, share as widely as possible to spread this message, and subscribe to our channel. My name is Donald. You've been watching Worldview.